Unpaved, Sean Salisbury here. We're bringing authentic, real stuff to you. Hardcore opinion.
Sean Salisbury, a great NFL analyst, a former NFL quarterback.
To me, Tom Brady is the GOAT because he's done more with less than any player at that position we've ever had.
What's up, everybody? Welcome into another episode of the Unpaved Podcast with Sean Salisbury. I am Adam Sager. Like and subscribe to the YouTube channel at Unpaved Sean Salisbury. Sean, it's finally time. We've been waiting, seems like forever, for the college football playoff to start, which is they're making all these changes to the teams that can get in and everything. Change the schedule. Let's go. Week after conference championship games, let's go. No, we got to wait 2+ weeks. Or whatever it is to get going. We got Alabama, Oklahoma tonight. We'll get into all that. We'll break down all the games that we have this weekend. Then we'll touch on some big NFL games, including last night's crazy comeback by the Seattle Seahawks. And could a former, arguably the greatest coach of all time, return to the NFL? We'll hit on that as well. But first off, Sean, are you excited? We got a lot of good sports this weekend to watch, and there's not enough time to watch them all.
Yeah, well, if the Thursday night lead-in is anything that matters to college and the NFL, it'll be one hell of a friggin' weekend when it comes to doing football. Yeah, I can't wait, man. I'm excited, and I know we're going to discuss last night, and I can't wait to discuss. I mean, I guess we got a AAA baseball team playing against a power team, according to a former coach, too, who may be the very best of all time in college.
Right.
So good conversation. I cannot wait to spend part of this chattering about it and getting after it, man. Should be all awesome. Right, last night was a good place to start as well.
Yeah. Before we get into that, first tell me about Augusta Precious Metals.
Well, I can tell you about Augusta. First of all, you got to text SEAN to 35052. Get that down, or AugustaPreciousMetals.com. I just want to educate you on this. Augusta Precious Metals, for those of you, I think when we think of precious metals in the past, I know ideas like, man, am I traipsing down the wrong road? Is this the wrong place to go? Well, as you do a little bit of educational study and look into somebody and get that teach from somebody else, you start to realize just how valuable it is. Don't rely on Washington and the ups and downs and ebbs and flows. And sometimes the mountaintop's great, but when the dollars, go in place you don't want it to go, how about precious metals, tangible assets in your hands? And that's the main thing Augusta Precious Metals is taught me throughout this, but also the way that they've handled it and an opportunity to get confidence and security and peace of mind in retirement. But I say one step more, why wait till retirement? Why wouldn't you start now so when it's time for retirement, you're ahead of the game? Text 35052. Text Sean, SEAN, excuse me, to 35052. And you can get $40 trillion threat report that is on there, because we're headed to $40 trillion in debt in this country. We're already in the upper 30s now. Now, all that's there, but it won't take long. It's just a simple guide and a simple read to educate you on how it affects all of us, SEGs, me, you, billionaires, everybody. So, well, Sean, maybe not them. Well, maybe not them as much as it does us, but it affects everybody. So go on and educate yourself, and you're going to realize just how valuable precious metals and gold is. And I'm telling you what gold is doing, headed north, not south. And there's a big difference, and it's already there. So don't lump it into all the other things that you start to think about finances and about retirement and about confidence in retirement. Text Sean, SEAN, to 35052. Just educate yourself. That's number one. And then secondly, what Augusta Precious Metals can do for you to help you along that path of confidence. I love them. I'm grateful for my relationship with them and also their support and being a partner on this show, but more importantly, educating others about not only the pitfalls, but the uptick in what precious metals and gold educate you on. Because with the country where it's at, don't rely on Washington, man. Rely on what is actually winning, and that is precious metals, and that's Augusta Precious Metals, AugustaPreciousMetals.com. Text Sean, S-E-A-N, to 35052, and educate yourself. And I would imagine heading into 2026, you might want to jump all in. It's not a bad place to be. Augusta Precious Metals. Sean, text that to 35052.
All right, thanks to Augusta Precious Metals, as always. Sean, last night was arguably game of the year. I mean, you had the Seahawks down multiple scores going into the fourth quarter. They come back, get a one-point victory. So we actually both were right last night. You took the Rams minus the 1.5. I took the – or plus the 1.5, excuse me. Right. I took the money line on the Seahawks. We both – you won by a half point. I won by a point. We're all happy. But, I mean, what a game. It felt like the Rams controlled this game damn near the entire game. Even as Seattle was coming back, it never really felt in danger. And then all of a sudden, boom, it was in danger. And we had the fumble play where Sam Darnold technically threw it backwards, hit off a helmet forward into the end zone. A Seahawks player, not even diving on it, just kind of jogs over, picks it up, and boom, it's a touchdown. A lot of weird stuff happened last night, but damn, again, we talked about it. Puka Nacua is just that dude, and Matt Stafford is that dude despite the loss. I didn't think we'd have 38-37 on the board, maybe 28-27, but a lot of scoring and a night where there was a lot of rain too, and it felt like the Rams did everything we talked about yesterday to win this game, except show up defensively.
Well, it was, you'd think we knew what we were talking about.
Yeah.
From yesterday to today. Sam Darnold. His kryptonite is the Rams, and it showed until the end.
Yeah.
Strange plays. Phenomenal throws. Darnold playing from behind to get him from behind, and desperate, what happened? Tried to throw it to places. Defensive coordinator Chris Shula did a great job of dropping down at the goal line. A defensive lineman into coverage. We don't read defensive linemen as quarterbacks in coverage. Drops a little zone blitz, drops that, boom. Sit right in the, they knew the adjustment. The inside slant, boom, throws it right to him. Then you saw the other time when they looked like man, dropped into coverage, and then jumped off and played zone and intercepted that slant on Darnold. So we saw that part. Sam, who has got guts, but can get, when he's going south, tendency to think that his arm can make every throw, and he gets a little hero-like, and he did last night. Well, and Jackson Smith and Jigba was really disappeared for a half. They didn't go to him. Like, what, I think one target, and then the second half, bam, yeah, or late, starts to take over and do his thing. If you turn the TV off at 30-14 or sooner, you missed one hell of a grind in the way it was. Matthew Stafford throws three touchdowns. I thought Stafford played an average game for him. I swear to you, I did. Yet, he throws for 450 plus, and just continues to elevate his game, even when he's not playing his best. He missed some throws that Stafford will never miss on a normal day. The fade, the out and up, it was like a stutter go is what it was for Nacua. I think mm-hmm. It was the third quarter, overthrew him. The one where he had a deep over, a deep crosser, and missed him, I think it was the tight end by about 20 yards. That's not Stafford yet. Heck, he left 150 yards on the table. And he still played good. A game like that, people go home and say, I had a career game last night. For Stafford, he's going home saying, we lost, and I missed a few. And just the two-point play that you're talking about that was a lateral, always do something that secures it, because you never know if the referees make a hamburger decision on a state call. They made the right choice last night. Boom, it paid off to get this game to overtime. So you saw it all. You saw some really good defensive plays. You saw pressures. Darnold was getting hit. Stafford got hit. So it had everything you want, and then Puka does what he does. Stumbles his way into 200-plus yards receiving last night. And I joke when I say stumble. The guy's just phenomenal. And so it was impressive, and we kind of called it. They'll score. This guy will make throws. That guy will be tough. You double him, he still gets open. Bad decisions. Don't try to be here. And then in the end, driving down the field, giving yourself a chance, and putting yourself in position to win a game and then get the two-point conversion. Darnold has struggled. He was, I think, 1-4 going in against the Rams. We've seen the last few where he struggled, 4 picks this year, and then the playoff game last year. What's he do? Turns around. Great players or guys who feel it and trust it and are confident, even when it's not going good. He had every reason and everybody else, but he was getting booed at home. He got booed at times last night. And the guys had a good season. To not pay 1 ounce of attention to it and to continue to play, those two cats right there are a big reason why that the top of the quarterback ladder is pretty damn good. Darnold's trying to get where Stafford is, but it was impressive, man. And we said going in yesterday, Stags, that the stars had to play great. And did they not?
Yeah.
Jackson Nakua. Smith stepped up.
Yep.
Nakua, Stafford. Darnold didn't play great. Neither quarterback played great, but they made the necessary plays at times. The yards Stafford could care less about after losing, but this was monster win for the Seattle Seahawks. I thought it was our best Thursday night game of the year, in my opinion, and we knew it could be going in. Phenomenal performance, worth the price last night.
Yeah, Nakua had 12 catches for 225 yards, 2 touchdowns. One thing that we did see last night, for the first time in NFL history, the Rams are the first team in history to lose with 500-plus yards, 0 turnovers, a +3 in the turnover game, with the Seahawks turning it over 3 times and losing. So the Rams
had that 16-point lead in the fourth quarter, yes, I think it was. 16-point
lead. And one of the things the Rams did and Seattle didn't really do, and it was kind of the opposite. And I guess this is one way in which I was wrong. You know, I said the Rams, you need to come out, run the ball with Kyren Williams, Blake Corin, establish that run, and then allow Stafford off that. They ran the ball 37 times. I mean, what more can you ask for? And now they didn't run it particularly well, but they continued to run it and get those, you know, carries in there, taking up time in the game. And then Seattle, they only ran it 20 times with their top two backs, just like the Rams did last time. So very interesting the fact that Seattle won that game, and now Seattle has the number one seed in the NFC. The Rams fall to 5th in the standings, or in the NFC playoff standings, that is, with, you know, the Seahawks taking over the division. I mean, what a massive game. What a massive comeback for Seattle, because if you're Seattle, you want to play at home in the playoffs. You get all those games in Seattle with that crowd and that weather. It's tough on teams.
You could be seeing the Rams go on the road to play Carolina in their building or Tampa. You could.
Yeah.
And for a 5 seed, I can still tell you that I think the Rams can beat anybody in football. I understand Sands last night. It's a divisional game. It's hard to beat a team twice. And it is. And Seattle came through when necessary. The Rams just didn't do what it needed to do at the end to put the game away and out of reach to where you, you know, convert one of those and, you know, make that field goal that he's been good at, Rams kicker, and we don't get the overtime. All those ifs happen. But I can tell you, man, that it's the aberration that you will run the ball 10 to a dozen times more than the other team and lose on attempts. That's the stat. And I brought that up, how it's a telling stat. That is one of those. The team that rushes the ball more wins an alarming amount of time each Sunday. Last night, and then the great equalizer is when you got a quarterback who can pump it for 450 plus and you still don't win. The Rams game plan, they had it settled. They missed those. They did everything they wanted to do except close it out. Except close it out when necessary. And you look at a game like that and you say, well, up 30-14, they must have laid the ball on the ground 2 or 3 times to let Seattle back into it. They didn't. They just didn't convert, and Seattle made a couple plays at the right time, and there you have it. That is you go ahead and look at the statistics. You'll say there's no damn way that the Rams lost that game last night. Even with the Seahawks turning it over and at home and the booth. If that game ends different, Sakes, just think about if they don't make the 2-point conversion and they lose. Mm-hmm. And I love the balls of Coach McDonald to go for it at home. You're feeling it. It's like, damn, let's get this thing done. You understand that the one half, get it done. I like it. Take the chance. You're still a playoff team. I love the guts and for them to respond and get it done. But I want you to think about the narrative today. Coming out of this, if we're talking today from last night. One, Stafford solidifies the MVP and it's not in a runaway. Two, and it would have been. Two, the Rams now fighting for home field advantage and are the best team in the NFL. They went into Seattle and beat them in their building. Now they're the five seed. Three is, we would already said, damn, what happened to Sam? He can't beat it. The Seahawks fans are frustrated. The narrative on local radio would have been, and it may still, man, Sam's got to protect the football. We've seen the movie. Well, then he comes down, takes him down the field, makes a couple great throws, boom, game's over. So it was a phenomenal, phenomenal performance. And if you missed it, hopefully you taped it. Well, you can't, right? I've tried it. You can't tape the prime. I've tried to tape those things on there, and you can't. That's exactly. I can't find a way to record those on your thing. So if you missed it, you better go find it. Maybe the NFL Network will have it or something, because you missed one hell of a football game filled with stars, no doubt.
Real quick, jump through this quick topic. Josina Anderson reports that NFL teams are reaching out to Bill Belichick to gauge interest on possibly coming back to the sidelines. We currently have the Giants and the Titans open head coaching vacancies. She says up to seven more teams are considering making a change at the head coach position. And then there's three to four teams looking at potential GM moves, with the Miami Dolphins being open right now. You think if you were one of these NFL teams, the Giants, the Titans, the Jets, if that opened, or the Browns, if Stefanski's out, whoever it is, would you be looking at Bill Belichick with the way things have gone in Chapel Hill and all the distractions he's had around him over the last couple of years? Would you like that move if you're one of those teams, fans?
I said during this North Carolina early on, girlfriend involved, or is she a fiance now, whatever, whatever. You know, that the distraction was unlike Bill Belichick's ever had in the NFL, that he allowed it to happen. He never allowed that to happen in the NFL. So, and I even said on this show that I do believe what he's doing in North Carolina with the distraction, the optics. Now, I don't think any of us expected him to dominate first year of North Carolina at all. But the optics, and then, but when you're getting beat like that, you know, the first thing we say, even though they're not that talented right now, first thing we say is it's all the distractions that are creeping in that are allowing this to happen, which never happened in the end. No play. You weren't going to be a distraction, and Bill wasn't going to allow it when he coached New England or at any point in time in his career. And I'm a huge Bill Belichick fan, but he's not above criticism on this. So the optics look bad. So now push forward to this and Josina Anderson's report, their interest. And I thought about it hard last night, dude, and this morning, thinking about, okay, why? Well, obviously, they're saying the skin in the game for all those years at an NFL level. They still have respect for him as a personnel guy, front office guy, and as a coach. And I get that. Maybe we are a little hyperbolic, say, what he's doing in North Carolina, it's a game passed him by, what's going on?
Yeah.
And I would have to sit down, Segzi, to answer your question. I would have to sit down with him face-to-face. Would I bring him in to talk to him? I would, because of his history. I mean, come on, man. When you've had that kind of domination for two plus decades, of course I got to talk to him. And then I got to find out where he is. And I would be specific on my questions of what's the distraction? Give us from an optic standpoint what you think it looks like to us, what's happened at North Carolina. I would ask him, because Bill would ask the same thing to a player or anybody else that he was interviewing for a job with him. And if I was convinced, I'd look long and hard at it, because I got news for you. 32 coaches in the NFL, half of them can't hold his nuts when it comes to X's and O's and coaching and getting people ready now. And so they've given the hall pass of college back to NFL, and I get that. I can tell you this, though. There ain't 10 teams standing in line in college to interview him, Power 4 schools, that if they were even open, because his name wasn't mentioned at Michigan. It hasn't been. It was never mentioned at Penn State. Penn State, hell, you can throw – hit to four Bryson DeChambeau drivers from New England, and you'll be there, right? At least it feels that way, right?
Yeah.
Well, that we've never heard his name once mentioned on a bigger college program. Well, so the truth is, Bill Belichick is the square peg NFL guy trying to get into the round hole college guy, not the other way around, college back to pro. So, Segs, I would, out of not just respect, but out of his domination at the NFL level forever. Now, it went away a little more when Tom Brady was gone. But look at Mike Vrabel's domination now that Drake May's back. That position does help. And so we saw that. Look what it did for Todd Bowles and his job in Tampa, getting him when Bruce Arians left to elevate that group there and get that Super Bowl. So, yeah, I would, but I'd have to do a deep dive, long interview, It's not the same as it was had I interviewed him 5 years ago. So damn right I want him on the NFL team. Now, I don't know if it's going to come to fruition, but I would have to stare him straight in the face and say, what's the distraction? What's it going to be like going forward? Are you the same guy that was in New England? And if you've changed, I need to know why and what the changes are. That isn't happening at training camp if I hire you here. You now have to be the guy that Belichick always was if you're interviewing. You got to let him know that you are no longer, I hate to say it because you haven't, you are no longer, what's the word? MFIC, man. You're not the motherfucker in charge right now.
Right.
You got to prove to us that you still are after that powder blue is proven you're not. And if you get here and do it, we'll put that hat together and boom, you can wear that one too. But right now, got to fix it because it appears that the MFIC is his girlfriend. And I don't think the NFL teams want that perception, but I'd have to find out. And she's not allowed in the interview when I'm doing my deep dive trying to figure out where we're headed. But yes, Bill Belichick has earned throughout his career at least the conversation in the interview moving forward. The team's got to decide, whoever that is, if he's worth the conversation of fixing their program, or should I say their NFL team.
Yeah, we should see here in the next couple of weeks some job openings. Obviously, we'll have Black Monday after the last game of the regular seasons. That Sunday, Monday comes, that's when we start seeing people fired, coaches fired, GMs fired, and then we'll be able to go from there and say, okay, here's some ties, to Belichick here, or is he going to get an interview here? All that type of stuff. So we'll see as that happens. But looking ahead, Sean, college football playoff kicks off tonight. We've got Alabama, the ninth seed, versus Oklahoma, the eighth seed. OU has already beat Bama in Tuscaloosa 23-21 earlier this season. Bama had three big turnovers in that game, which allowed Oklahoma to take charge and win that game. What do you expect? What's your first thoughts when you think about this game? Mateer hasn't been the same guy since the injury. Ty Simpson had that middle of the season where he was really, really damn good. And then it's kind of fallen off along with Alabama over these last 3-4 weeks and not being the same team they were in the middle of the season. So when you just look at it straight up right now, which way you lean in terms of just who wins the game and what's the biggest key for both teams in this game?
Yeah, I don't know if it's been a big distraction, but you can't help but wonder players and Kalen DeBoer where his head's been with he's at a historic job, but with the Michigan situation.
And it's regardless still being talked about daily with Kalen DeBoer.
That's what I'm saying, Segs. And you can't go through an interview without having to answer it, which does become a distraction because you're not the only one answering it. So are your players and the assistants and anybody else involved with the program. My initial thought on this, if you said, Sean, you got one key, one thought, is Alabama better run the football. I'm just telling you, they better run the friggin' football. If you'd asked me this question 2 months ago, I'd have said Alabama's kicking Oklahoma's ass because Oklahoma's offense with the Mateer injury is not back to where it needs to be.
Right.
But I can tell you this, both healthy, Mateer's not taking a backseat to Simpson. I think Simpson's good. Simpson, the last few times, and you know how I felt at 1.6, I think he was 22-1 or something, touchdowns to picks. So he was they haven't run the football great all year long on a consistent basis, Alabama has, and that's not who Alabama is. And I'm going to tell you, for everything we talk about offensive geniuses, the dude who's the head coach at Oklahoma knows how to coach defense and knows how to take your best stuff away. And Alabama's best stuff isn't the run game, but they better have found a way in a couple weeks and looking at their full season, you better run the damn ball. Because Ty Simpson, you know what he's looked like lately? And I have a lot of respect for his game, and I've enjoyed watching him perform this year, Six. And I think he's a Sunday guy. I do.
Mm-hmm.
Is he looks like a pitcher who's got too many innings late in the season. That's how I compare it. If you're a baseball fan, whether it's the same, it just doesn't look as crisp to me.
Yeah.
And I don't even know if the numbers – right. There's no doubt. And I know that he's still got it. The question is it revitalized now? Because I don't think Alabama wins on a one-dimensional game with a healthy quarterback at Oklahoma. In your mind, honestly, if I told you both quarterbacks are fully healthy, You're not taking, Mateer's not taking a backseat to Simpson in this game, or at least going in. Now do the other side. Alabama always flies to the football, yep. But Oklahoma's defense has been has carried them through some tough times. Alabama better run it. And if they don't run it, I'm going to tell you what, Sags, I don't know what it's weird, this feeling. And it's not just the gut feeling. I've watched them and I've seen both these teams play numerous times this year. Dick around and Oklahoma's moving on. Defense travels, and we are at the time of year where your quarterback better be a playmaker and your defense better get great stops. And right now, I think Oklahoma's defense is better than Alabama's offense. I do. Question is, how will Alabama deploy themselves so they can create some run threat? And if they're able to get that on a consistent basis, Alabama probably is a better team. I would not sleep on this and think that Oklahoma, because of all the 12, we've talked more about James Madison and Tulane because of, should they be in? And we'll hear what Nick Saban had to say about James Madison. Tell me a team, who's the least talked about team in a postseason right now? Nobody's talking about the Sooners. It's kind of caught that tweener. We're playing them on, they're playing on Friday. Kalen DeBoer to Michigan's getting more talk than Oklahoma is. Of all the teams in this playoff, the team that's just kind of is the Oklahoma Sooners. Right. And maybe we've lost sight of, because Mateer's, who wasn't healthy when the Texas game and worked his way back in. We saw that swag early on. Alabama, boom, they get their ass kicked by Georgia. Well, okay, Georgia. Oklahoma's got no love. Be careful if you're Alabama, because they will feast on you if you become one-dimensional, and they will hit the hell out of your quarterback.
Yeah, and you're talking about the Alabama running game. Jam Miller, who got hurt in the Iron Bowl, will play. Now, last time he played against Oklahoma, he only had 9 carries for 27 yards, so he wasn't effective. But as you said, it's important, just like we talked about last night with the Rams, it's important to at least establish a running game. Even if you're only getting 3 to 3.5 yards per carry, keep going to it, keep showing it, because if you just start dropping Ty Simpson back, who, like we talked about, kind of looks like he's lost his fastball, he's going to start putting that ball in harm's way. And then you have a couple turnovers, and then OU gets some short fields and allows them to score points off turnovers. That can be the difference in this game, and that's what happened in Tuscaloosa about a month ago.
Segs, you're damn right. So we know the movie, right? You've seen it, correct? Yep. Haven't you seen some of this movie? Okay, now let me take you back to the Georgia SEC championship game. And now I want you, just on the surface, we don't need to take a deep dive into stats, just from your naked eye, whose defense you like better this year? Now, Georgia's picking it up, but for the majority of the year, Georgia's or Oklahoma's?
I mean, Oklahoma's just been tremendous.
Okay. If you're Alabama, you just got your ass handed to you in the SEC championship game, right?
Mm-hmm.
2 weeks or whatever it's been may not be enough for you to get that out of your system, but you better, because it's not going to get any easier tonight.
Right.
And that you can make the argument. And I know you, people sometimes don't want to, because there's still this Big 12 stigma about Oklahoma. Right. Oh, gosh, Kyler Murray and Caleb Williams and offense. Oh, John Mateer came up. Brent Venables has got this defense playing out of their friggin' mind and has all year. And we did this. So you got to let go. This is the SEC now.
Yeah,
and they're playing like an SEC defense. So with all that, I get it. Georgia's got the history and all that. But I'm just telling you that you go ahead and blink, or you come in there faint of heart, Oklahoma's going to make you. It's going to their defense can humiliate you if you're not careful. So yes, be careful. Sure. And I would be careful being one dimensional in this, because I can promise you Alabama doesn't want to drop back 40 times in this game. If they do, they're not winning.
Yeah.
They will not win the game.
We'll make our picks at the end of the show with our 6-pack of picks. We'll pick all 4 college football games and a couple big NFL games when it comes to the playoffs. But let's now go to the 10th ranked Miami Hurricanes, who sneak in the last selection show. They face Texas A&M coming off the loss. Who you like in this game? Is it Texas A&M still one of the, you know, top 3-4 teams in the country? They just happen to have a bad game against Texas, or is this Texas showed something show the vulnerability in Texas A&M that Miami can take advantage of and get this win in this first round of the playoffs?
Oh, the U in Miami. I love Cristobal. He'll be committed to try and be physical in the game. That's who Mario is, yep. Always has been. But I can tell you, don't count on A&M playing back-to-back bad games. That's one. A&M's better. That's two. Miami was hanging on the thread, deserved to get in and did that emotion, but they can't take a deep sigh. Okay, we made the playoff. It doesn't stop there. It just comes down to this for me, Segs. I think he's a good player. He's had good moments. I don't trust that if you hit Carson Beck early and force a couple bad plays, that he's going to overcome it. I've seen him do it. I've seen both. That's my thing. I don't know at times who he is. At times I think he's confident, rips it, looks like a Sunday guy, and is damn good. Then there's times I see him at Georgia and at Miami thinking, and his numbers, he's good. He's a hell of a player.
Yeah.
But Segs, I'm telling you, guys change when you get him early. I would expect A&M to come out similar to what OU's going to do. I trust Simpson a little bit more than I do Carson Beck. Beck's that guy who, like, walks into the building, you're like, okay, you give you that wow factor optics, and then all of a sudden you're like, what's missing? I almost feel like it's a Carson Wentz thing. Enormous talent, looks great sometimes, and you're going to draft him high. Then there's sometimes you say, what's missing from this? And you can't quite put your finger on it, confident, tatted, sleeping, swagger. And then sometimes you look at him and I see the face and just – and I shouldn't judge it on body language, because sometimes guys with no body language are some great players. But then I look at him and I say, and then I'll watch a throw and he yanks one, and then I'll throw a pick. And I'm like, can he mentally overcome this? Because he's a good player. I just know that if I'm Texas A&M, you do not want to let them settle into where he feels it. Because if he's feeling it and he's on one of those days on a heater, look out.
Right.
But the similarity on the defenses of A&M and Oklahoma about their attack to get and really wreck you.
Yeah.
I think A&M can wreck the game. I trust the A&M quarterback Reed more than I do Beck in this game, 100%. Even though Beck's upside throwing it. Gimme A&M's two-dimensional. I think A&M wins the game. And if Miami turns the ball over a few times, it may not be a fourth quarter game. This thing may be over before then. Gimme A&M. Well, I know we'll pick them, but A&M's physicality is going to win out on this, I think. I just don't trust Carson Beck four quarters, 12, 13, 14 games a year. I just don't.
Yeah, when you look at this game, I think one thing to look at, which kind of goes with what you're saying, you have multiple first-round picks on both sides of the defensive lines for each team. You got Reuben Bain, arguably the number one pick, number one non-quarterback as of right now heading into draft season. You got Cassius Howell, and I'm blanking on the other edge rusher for Texas A&M's name, but you have those two guys, which are probably going to be first-round picks. So they can get after the quarterback, both teams. Who can get there? Who can make it tougher on the quarterback, I think, is who wins this game. And I'm with you. I think Texas A&M has the better full defense.
They're a better all-around team. Yes. They're just a better all-around team. They are.
So that's where I think they can just make it hell on you from anywhere with the blitzes and the way they do things there with the Aggies, and it being at Kyle Field, that's a big game changer.
They're waltzing into about 106,000 or whatever it is, 103,000. Mm-hmm. It is going to be rocking. Hell, just to go to Northgate and have yourself a cold beer and hear the stands for the bars is going to be fun to do for A&M. With this, the one thing I know about Cristobal why am I losing my mind? A&M's coach.
Mike Elko.
Yeah, Elko. Is one obviously defensive, a great defensive coach, the other offensive line coach. So they both think the same when it comes to physicality, right? They're going to want to win the game that way. But one other thing along with that, Segs, is we always talk about don't let the offense like Puka Nacua beat you. Seattle, let Puka Nacua beat him. And, dude, if you'd have told me this going in would happen real quick last night, I'd say there's no way. He 215 yards and the quarterback throws 450. There's no way they're losing. And they run it 35-plus. No way. Yeah. And they did. That's about as big aberration as you'll ever see. But I digress. And moving to this one is with the A&M now I lose my train of thought on this with the A&M. Oh, we always talk about offensive players. You take that guy. Well, don't let your best player beat you.
Right.
Well, this is in this game for A&M. You can't let Bain disrupt the game so much that you right. you lay the ball on the ground twice or he hits you, fumble. You can't let him take the game over. Make somebody else. If that means you got to double him and chip on the way out, don't let that dude take the game over. And if you can do that, then you force Miami's offense to take care of it. So that's got to be a plan with the offense, with the grouping up front offensively for the Texas A&M Aggies. And here's another thing. If you're going to blitz and pressure, don't miss, because that A&M quarterback can beat you two ways, brother, and he's proven it. And he's staying in school, and he's going to be hell to pay another year, right? Yep. He is. Yeah, he's staying in for next year, right, Segs? Right. So didn't he commit to that already? Didn't I say that? Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Okay, so this is another kid who's – so Miami, the feet between Beck and Reed advantage Texas A&M. So while you're going to sell out to go hit him, you better be careful not to miss it. But you got to control Bain on offense, on your offense, to make sure he doesn't wreck the game, and that'll be a priority for A&M.
Yeah, and one key for Texas A&M's defense is to slow down Malachi Toney, who is arguably the best freshman in college football right now. He has just been tremendous. And what else does Texas A&M have?
He's a freak.
What else does Texas A&M have in their advantage? Those guys in the white suits that do all the weird cheers. I mean, when you have those guys on your side.
Don't make fun. I'm an A&M postgraduate degree. Don't make fun.
You're affiliated with them.
Yeah, but if I had to give the speech.
Love those guys.
Yeah,
love those guys.
Yeah, if I had to give.
You want a jumpsuit.
Song, what are they? Not song boys. What do we call them?
Again, I have no idea.
They're called, what are they called again? We got song leaders at SC. Don't do it. Yeah, don't. Because they're really spicy. Say,
with I like the fact, we're just going to call them song boys from now on.
Okay. That I was thinking so you're basically saying I got my song girls, which that's what they're not called cheerleaders at SC. They're song girls.
Right.
They're and now I'm trying to think. And I don't mean it disrespectful because my master's degree from A&M and I love them. And so people are saying, oh, Sean, what a great dig by you. It's a great dig by me, but it wasn't on purpose because there's no doubt the cheesiest night before in college football, even A&M fans that are buddies of mine that are grads, tell you.
RGK 86 has it. Yell leaders, but yell they're not leaders. Yell leaders. Yeah. They're not. They're song boys now.
We're calling them song boys, right?
Yeah.
But 100%. Their night before pep rally is. I mean, people love it, but their speeches. No, I'm talking about A&M students. They love it, but it is the cheesiest. The cheesiest. Listen. Go to an A&M game. There's more set up, stand up, kiss the person next to you, back and forth, swing. There's more like history and games things they do, you know, that they have every week. And I know people love it, but I would say the song boys probably face a little bit of because of their speech where they go, "Oh, Rock."
If
Kansas, Northgate,
I don't even know what the hell they say.
And Old Rock left. Oh,
yeah.
Yes, I'm not making fun of them. Yes,
I am.
I am. Of course you are. And so am I. So it's song boys. I had their thing last night. I'm sure there's a clip that talks about them.
We right? have to remember this because I think we both have Texas A&M winning. I think that they will win. So come Monday when we talk about it, it is a must. I don't even care if they lose. We have to ask Coach JB what he thinks about the song boys.
We've never heard him talk
because
about
the song if boys you anymore. Just want like there I is no like he, yeah I know what he's gonna say too, but we just have to let him use his words to tell us what he thinks about the
well,
song
let me give
boys.
You a futures bet, like a poly market futures pick. My guess is that JB will say it starts with a G and ends with a Y, and there's a
100%.
There's a vowel in between, and it's three letters. That's what he'll. That would be my guess of what he'll lean into, and
drop
not
the shitbirds in there.
Oh yeah, there's no doubt. So while they have fun, there's no doubt it's cheesy and gaudy and sometimes cringeworthy. But I know they get into
always
it. Yeah, cringeworthy. Yeah, it is, and they got a lot of different things they do. But I love my Aggies, man. I love
who
it.
Who came
and,
up with that?
It's fun. I not me. Okay.
Who's sitting there one day like, we're going to wear all white, a whole all white jumper, and we're going to start doing cheers like this. And then you lift one leg like you're a flamingo, and then you're holding your hands together. And
I was walking down from between Northgate. We were headed to Miami. And on the way to Miami, we saw Old Rock. And I love you Aggies, and you Aggie fans know, as a postgraduate degree from there, I love them. But the Song Boys are a little hard for certain. What are they called again? Not Song Boys.
Song
what
Boys.
Yell Leaders. Yell Leaders. Yeah, the Yell Leaders. But yeah, they know they get made fun of, and it makes for good banter. And no, by the way, Alexander Marino, does the new head coach at JMU have any say, input on this playoff game? Not with the other one coaching, they don't. Not a say in it. None. Just like those guys that are leaving. Lane Kiffin has no say other than sending his assistants to Ole Miss to coach. No. The guys that are there are the ones coaching. You have zero say moving forward about game plans in these games. But A&M's better than Miami, I think, Shakes. I just do.
A little bit of a teaser for my six pack of picks. I just flipped my pick away from A&M just because of the Song Boys. That little discussion we just had pissed me off at A&M. And
Not one of those Song Boys is going to make one tackle or one throw.
Oh, I don't care. I despise them now.
Okay, so but you're okay with
they're losing two games in a row.
The turnover chain, is that what Miami used to have? The one that was like,
yeah, they probably still do. They had the
same one with like
Georgia had the shoulder pads, like the Legion of Doom ones.
Right.
Miami had the big chain with the U on it, and then there's other teams with all kinds of stuff.
Who has the big old clock hanging around his neck? What's the rapper? Remember, funny guy, old school. I know Bailey or Triple E said there.
Yeah, somebody say who it is.
Help us out.
Flavor Flav.
Flav. You gotta love some Flavor Flav, dude. Who's he rooting for tonight? I would imagine Flavor Flav because the gold, the chain kind of matched him. But Flavor Flav may surprise you. He may be thumbs up on the Song Boys, dude, and say A&M kicks their ass. You say no.
Nobody outside.
Without a doubt, the cheesiest. Yeah. You got to call them. I think they actually should change their name to Song Boys instead of Yell Leaders. I think it'd be funny.
We need to petition A&M and send that in. You're a graduate.
I spent some coin there. So guess what? Song Boys it is. You win, but you're flipping your pick. How dare you?
Yes.
You gotta love the Song Boys, man.
Texas A&M loses their second game in a row tomorrow.
I thought you were going to say Texas A&M loses their man card because the Song Boys.
That's well, I mean, that's arguably already been done.
Yeah, the very first time it happened. Okay, here we go. So there you
Now moving on to Tulane Ole Miss. You got the 11 seed Tulane, the 6 seed Ole Miss. I don't give Tulane much of a chance here. I think that it's going to be a blowout, but I think more so we could talk about what Nick Saban said about Tulane, JMU, basically being AAA teams, like the AAA champion. Let's just say the Charlotte Knights, because that's the White Sox AAA team, and that's the only AAA team I know that is definitely a AAA team. Let's say they win the championship and they get put into the MLB playoffs. That's how we just put them in, just because, hey, you won the AAA. You should get a spot in the major league playoffs. That's what Nick Saban compared it to for Tulane and SMU, getting a spot in this playoff.
Well, listen, I got a handful of really good, two of my really good buddies. One of my best friends went to JMU, and I got a couple buddies that went to Tulane. But I will say this as loud and possible as I need to hear. So much respect. Having Willie Fritz here from Tulane, that's a great, a lot of good coaches go there and go on. Good program. JMU has been a dominant, FCS school for a while until they jumped into the FBS. Hell of a program. But let's stop right there. Is Nick Saban wrong? That's exactly what this is. I've been preaching it without saying it like that. And to hear it come out of Nick Saban's mouth, like, damn. And I know Nick Saban respects everybody. Hell, if you ask Lou Holtz, he'd say if it was Notre Dame at 74-point favorites, Lou would would say, man, we got to play really good against JMU because they're dangerous and you're up by 74, just like you used to say, like I've said about SMU when they hit the death penalty. Right. Well, listen, and I would imagine both Tulane and JMU are feeding off how people are talking about them, that they don't belong. And this will be up in JMU may put this on their uniform and tape it on, even though the respect Nick Saban to say there is, and it's hard to dog Saban if you're the coach of JMU because you said, oh, this Nick Saban. But the fact of the matter is he's not wrong, because if we pick the 12 teams, Notre Dame, JMU play, guess what? Notre Dame's going to beat them 10 out of 10 times. I'm just using Notre Dame as an example. They just are. Say what you want. SC's not losing to James Madison, and we're not even anywhere near the 12. You're just not. Now, you may get one sneak in there and win one out of the 10 upset, but James Madison and both James Madison and Texas A&M, James Madison and Tulane are capable of an upset. It ain't happening here. Ole Miss will win that game, and they'll feed off the underdog role. But he's right. It's a Triple-A team. There wouldn't be a Triple-A team if they were playing against the other schools that aren't Power Four schools, hence why we need the 12 best, and let's do it that way. But under the rules, you're allowed, and I hope JMU makes it a game, because if I'm watching, I'd like to see a close one. But I can tell you this. They've got no shot other than mathematically a shot, because, well, everybody does mathematically when they get into this. They've got zero shot to win it. Not just tonight. I'm talking about a play, win it where they're the national champions. Not going to happen. It is very much so that it is a Triple-A team that got invited to the Major League Baseball playoffs, and they wouldn't win a series either. It's not happening. Nick Saban is spot on.
If JMU or Tulane were to pull off an upset in either of these games over Oregon and Ole Miss, would Bob Chesney, who is coaching, would John Sumrall, who is coaching?
Yeah, JMU's got Oregon, right, and Tulane's playing Ole Miss.
Ole Miss,
correct?
Yes, right. Yes. Okay. Would either of those guys who are, you know, we talk about a Triple-A, both these coaches are leaving. Sumrall's going to Florida. Chesney's going to UCLA. So they even know, like, their school is a stepping stone to a bigger job, which we see them taking already. But they will coach in these playoffs. Do either one of them call out Nick Saban if they win? Do they mention the Triple-A team comment or just say something about being a Triple-A team if they win?
They will not mention him by name, but if you're – and I would – why wouldn't you say, well, you know, there's some out there who believe that it was a Triple-A team, but that Triple-A team must be pretty damn good. Yep. Yeah, I'm talking about if they go win. I don't think you're going to say one of those guys, because you never know along the way, because this is Coach Saban, that you're probably going to leave the El Jefe alone. But you're damn right you should mention it. Well, let me ask you this. If Nick Saban said that about Oregon, and he knows Dan and Lanning, mm-hmm. Well, don't you think Lanning with this person, I'd say, I love my guy, but we're pretty good Triple-A team, aren't we, Coach? That's what Dan would probably say, and then they should. It does. Saban's not above that, but they probably won't call him by name because you probably don't want to mess with El Jefe, right? You probably leave that alone. But, say, with JMU going to Oregon, I give them less of a chance than I would give Tulane against Ole Miss, but I don't give either one a chance. The difference in scores between the plus-minus category, both these games combined, should be pushing in the 20s to 30s. Okay. Total. I'm talking about one should. Now, like I said, if you're JMU and Tulane at all, you are thinking to yourself, it's the shock the world talk that everybody's talking about locker. But one thing I do know, we could talk about it all, but the second you line up and a guy knocks you in your teeth, now you got four quarters, then it becomes real. Much respect to those two programs. Neither one of them can win the national championship this year.
Any worry about Ole Miss not having Lane Kiffin? Pete Golding, obviously named head coach, is the acting head coach. They do have Charlie Weiss Jr. and some offensive assistants coming back from LSU to coach in this game. Been with the team preparing for this game and the college football playoffs. Any worry about Lane Kiffin not being there against Tulane, an in-state rival? You know, they've already played each other, so they know each other. So even Tulane, at least they've got to experience playing this team, which it does help a team in this situation like Tulane, where it's now the playoffs. Now you're playing this team again. You already got your ass kicked once, but now you know what to expect from this team coming in.
There is absolutely no doubt. That's why I give Tulane a better chance against Ole Miss than I do JMU at Oregon. is that's one reason, Segs, is of course it's different. The chaos that it took getting Charlie Weiss and the other assistants there, the chaos of how long it played out for Lane Kiffin. But here's the biggest part. Listen, they'll know it. Pete Golding, Charlie Weiss, they know how to put game plans together, as does Tulane. These guys they wouldn't be here in these situations if they didn't know how to do it and understand that, in truth, while Lane obviously is a presence, most of the game plans is X and O's and blocking schemes are put in by assistant coaches. Mm-hmm. Okay. And then they report to the head coach. So they'll handle the X and O's. Now, the execution of it, hell, that's game to game. You never know. I'm going to tell you what I'm keeping an eye on, Segs, is two factors. Do you think Ole Miss thinks they're going to kick Tulane's ass?
Yes. Generally?
Of course they do. They've seen the movie. They're playing in the next one, meaning another game against Tulane. They're obviously both, you know, one's Louisiana, one's Mississippi. They're close to each other, right? Not far away down the interstate. But the question that still looms that we don't know about, how many of these kids have already checked out of Ole Miss and are leaving?
Right.
How many of them are going to LSU? Is the quarterback or one of those two quarterbacks leaving? Because both can play. I'm not saying they don't want to do it. Have they gotten to the point they said they lost everybody that's in this? JMU really thinks they can win the championship, and they should. They're in the 12th, but they're not going to. Ole Miss, legitimate. You lose a coach who's your dynamic. You know, when you lose a guy who's that hands-on, of course you lose something. It can also motivate you for a minute, but it's the discipline, not the motivation, that carries you through. But my question is, Segs, how many guys are, we're going to kick Tulane's ass. I don't know if we can win the whole thing, but we're going to fight it and prove that we're good without Lane. But when this is over, my luggage is already there, because in January I'll be on LSU's campus. Are there any of those, which I would imagine there probably are? So if they've checked out now, Segs, this is where the danger zone gets. If JMU in their game, but in Tulane game against Ole Miss in particular, because their coach is gone, as you referred to, is as it goes on, you get to the fourth quarter and Tulane is hanging around within a score or 10 points, that's when you got to start saying, yeek, this gets a little dangerous, because once you allow a team to start believing that is worse than you and they're not as good as Ole Miss, and they start to believe it. We've seen this happen so many times. Average team hangs around, bam. Even though it was a different bowl game and Tulane wasn't average, they're good. But when my Trojans played them, two years ago, Segs, was it? Yeah, two years ago. Caleb Williams last year. So it would be 2 years.
Yeah.
When they played Tulane and scored 40 and still got beat, I'm thinking to myself, there's no way. But in that game, SC felt like they were superior, and you saw what happened defensively. Same thing here. If you're not all the way in, and they let Tulane hang around, and what happened? They got beat.
Yep.
Tulane beat the team that was offensively a better team. So, and at that time, Tulane had a good quarterback too. So, Segs, I do believe that there's a slight chance. I don't think it's going to happen, but it will affect them. And how long will it affect them? Because some of these guys will not be playing for Ole Miss that are starters this year. They're going to go somewhere else when this season's over.
Yes, for sure. All right. Before we get out of here, as we always do on to end the show on every Friday, we do a six-pack of picks where we pick games against the spread. We'll pick all four college football playoff games this week, and then we'll pick two NFL games, as you see there. So let's start with college football playoffs. Tonight, you got number 9, Alabama versus number 8, Oklahoma. Oklahoma's a 1.5-point favorite. I still haven't decided which team I'm going to pick, but it's a 40.5 over-under. So I'll say right now, I'm taking the over in the game. I don't know that I even want to take a team in this, because I'm not exactly sure who I would like in this game, but I do like the over.
That's exactly where I'm going. I've told you how Oklahoma can win this game.
Yes.
And how Alabama can lose it and obviously win it. But my first thought, even though I love defense, I believe you can get to 23-20 in this. To me, that's still a pretty good hell of an effort, because both quarterbacks are capable of big plays. Give me the over as well. Segs, my tendency right now is to think that Oklahoma is going to win the game outright. But if I was betting it, and I'm planning on it, the over, even though I'm going against my rule, the lowest under on our board is 40.5, which says Sean, take it. This is a 37-point game. This is 20-17, right? And it may very well be. But I'm leaning, even with all my defense talk, that somebody's going to make a big play offensively to get over that number. I would and will bet the over in this football game.
All right, then we got number 10, Miami, versus the Song Boys of Texas A&M. Texas A&M -3, 47.5. I already told you, give me the Miami money line. They're beating the Song Boys just because they have the Song Boys.
Give me A&M laying the points, and give me the under in the football game.
Okay. I just have Miami. Give me the under. Yeah, the over-under I wasn't quite sure about. I think you could see an early run on points and then both teams kind of settle in and then maybe get a little bit of a run at the end of the game like we see in college a lot, but I don't know if it'll be enough. So, I mean, yeah, you could be looking at a 24-20 type game here either way. I think it'll be a closer game, but yeah.
Well, I got 27. The first thought I had was 27-20.
Okay.
That gets the under. I'm going with the under. I think A&M's defense is going to force a couple turnovers. Give me them. And I'll take the under and A&M in this game.
And it's because you like the Song Boys.
Well, is there any doubt? That's the trifecta. If I could have, if there was a futures bet on the Song Boys, I'm in. Maybe the futures bet is, will they change the name to the Song Boys?
You'll be wearing one of the white jumpsuit things they wear all day tomorrow, and you're more happy that the Song Boys in Texas A&M get to be in the playoff than USC.
Well, there's no doubt. And Segs, yeah, both of my alma maters, basically. Segs, I'm about an hour and 15 minutes from College Station, where I live. Right. I can be up there wearing a white jumpsuit tonight. If I still weighed 300 pounds, it would be the Fat Elvis jumpsuit, too. Don't kid yourself. Okay, you know what I'm saying? Fat Elvis. So, not far away, brother. I'm close, but yes, I am with you. Jumpsuit, all white. Hey, I didn't think you were supposed to wear white after Labor Day.
I guess you don't care.
You can in Texas. Damn right they don't. Put some respect on a song boy, Sags. Okay? Song blue. Yeah, there you go.
How much respect can we put on it when we won't even call them by the right name? We made up a name for them. Actually, you did. I just ran with it. Call them Song Boys.
Can you take the blame for making up that name? Yeah, you just piled on and said that name sticks. Right. I was trying to do it.
It's your alma mater.
Yeah. Maybe I'll get a shirt printed with Song Boys.
Song Boys.
There you go. Yeah, A&M wins tonight.
All right.
Tomorrow. I think it's 11 o'clock game.
Yes, early game. Tulane versus Ole Miss. Ole Miss -17.5. 57.5 over under. I'll let you go first on this one.
Over Tulane. 17-point win by Ole Miss. Going to win. Two touchdown win. Tulane backdoor cover. Get close. Everybody goes on about their business. But the over. This is, I don't know, 38-24 type game. 38-23 type game. Yeah. Tulane's good enough to keep it close enough within three touchdowns, but give me the over. I think you get you'll be halfway to that over. We'll be more than halfway over at halftime to the over. Give me the over and give me Tulane inside the number. I'll take those points.
Yeah, I just have the over in this game. I don't like that number. I think it's pretty spot on by Vegas, so I don't know which way I would go. So right now I just have the over. That could change by tomorrow, but right now as I sit right here, I just have the over. All right, then you have JMU versus Oregon. Oregon -20.5 at a 45.5 over under. I've got Oregon. I've got the over. I don't think this game's close. Oregon might score 45 themselves.
I just was about to – you took the words right out of my mouth. I said Oregon's going to be within 5 points of the over by themselves.
Yeah.
This is 42-17.
Yeah, I was going to say
42-14. Yeah, 42-14. Well, they're 42-17. Would that still 27?
Yeah, that covers.
Yeah, still gets you in, right. Yeah, I got Oregon winning the game big, and I got the over, and I think that Oregon posts enough points to get close to the over themselves because I still think I think their quarterback and their program, even at 5, feel like they have something to prove because of a couple things, you know, that I think they think they're better than 5. And yeah. Dante, this is a big game. They're going to hang 35, 40 plus themselves.
Yeah, it'll be, and then we'll get the Texas Tech versus Oregon matchup, which I think could just be an awesome game. All right, switching over to the NFL, we got two big playoff deciding games when it comes to the NFL. We got more, but we only do six. Packers at Bears. Before we pick this game, Sean, I just saw this on Twitter. The Bears and the Levy Restaurants, which is a big company there in Chicago, have created the perfect elixir for Saturday's game against the Packers. Tell me if you would drink this. It's a Chicago-style hot chocolate. It's hot cocoa infused with Jepson's Malort and amaretto, topped with toasted, salted caramel marshmallows.
Why not?
If you haven't had Malort, you're missing out. It will... You could run your car on it. You can start a forest fire with it, and you can drink
it. Yeah, if you can run your car on it, I'm not sure it's good for your gut, but I'm in. Yeah,
but it's Chicago.
Oh, that's like asking me if I'd go to Chicago and eat a hot dog. Of course I'm going to Chicago and eat a hot dog or some deep dish pizza. Yes, I would try it. Probably have more than one. I'm one of those guys, Segs, that the very first time when it's a drink and it's like a local special in another state or a school, whatever you go, I'm all in. Even if it sounds, you know, Everclear mixed with Goldschlager and sure, pour me one for, let me see what it's like. Yeah. And, but will there be two? I don't know, but sounds like it's delicious. And you're right. You'll light a match within your gut when it comes to fire. But of course I'm trying it. Why wouldn't I? I'm all in. And this is a huge game to try it on, too.
Yes.
Why wouldn't
you? We got Packers visiting Soldier Field. We know 2 weeks ago it was a touchdown game. Bears had a chance late, couldn't get the pass to Cole Kmet. Now they come to Soldier Field. Bears a 1.5 favorite. Bears missing multiple wide receivers. We know Green Bay's missing Micah Parsons, who's out for the year with the ACL. So some big injuries on both sides, which leads me to just take the over in this game. And I don't like picking this 1.5 point for either team at this moment. I just like the over in this game myself.
I'm almost leaning to the under, Sakes. What kind of weather are we getting in your town?
It's supposed to be nicer than you would expect. Let me see here.
Like,
they've got
20s and
36 and clear. It's a Saturday night, so it'll probably feel like they're on
25 degrees.
Like 20-25 degrees there.
That's
maybe
not that
you
bad.
Get some, maybe you get a little bit of snow off the lake, some lakefront snow being right there on it, but nothing that I think will change this game in a big way.
Offensive advantage, a little bit of snow, no wind. At 30 degrees, that's not or 20, that's not effective with minimal wind, as long as it's not howling. That's the worst. Yeah, you can throw in a little bit of rain because the ball gets tackier. You can snow and everybody. You'll see some of your biggest offensive days in the world in games like that. Back in the day, Lynn Dickey threw for like 450 in a game. I've watched Warren Moon throw. I had some of my biggest games in value. Just because you know where you're going, they don't, when they're cutting out of it and making breaks and stuff. I still have Tennessee to lean to the under because I just think black and blue division, but maybe I'm overplaying it. I'm taking the Bears by field goal, Sakes. I think they're winning the game. I'm staying away from the number because I don't know how they're going to deal with the weather. 30 degrees never didn't bother me. I didn't care. But I don't know how they're going to deal with it. I think they'll be fine. But I think the Micah Parsons is a problem. I do, a big problem not having him. While I think the Packers, they're kind of like Oklahoma. We're not giving them enough love NFL-wise because the Packers are really damn good. But – I like the way the Bears are playing. I like the fact that Caleb Williams is not throwing the ball to the other team. And I think he's played. There's another guy. I think that because of the way we perceive him with his purse and the nails and the way he leads, that people are like, well, he can't be a good quarterback. Well, he's playing good football, man. I'm just telling you, he's making plays when necessary. Give me the Bears by a field goal at home. I'm laying those points. Give me them. They win at home.
Yeah, I mean, I hope you're right. I think this is going to be another really good game in this rivalry. I think you're right, Caleb, in that run game are going to have to be a big part of this with Luther Burden and Roma Dunze both down. We're playing better, but they still have enough weapons to compete with this Packers offense.
Yeah, and then, Dustin, to answer your question real quick, Segs, he said, can't same be said about Tulane if they're done, couldn't players question coach and wonder if his mind is on Florida? No doubt, but here's the difference. Ole Miss expects to win. Tulane's not supposed to win. So the underdog factor will drive them regardless of what their coach is thinking. And quite frankly, don't kid yourself, a couple of Tulane's players are going to follow him too. Watch. They're going to follow him too because he knows what they're like after having them in the program. It just happens. It's natural, and I get it. But Tulane's players have – it's a bigger reward because they're expected to win. I mean, expected to lose. So even though the coach may – and the coach is going to a bigger program. So it's almost like making your mark and kicking ass with Tulane – right. Is like, okay, I'm going to prove to them that the validation of me going to another program. So it's similar, but not quite the same because of where you are and how you're viewed in this game. And you are a heavy dog, and that's enough to overcome where your coach's head may be because you're going to handle it on the field as a player.
Yeah, definitely. And then finish off, you got the 7-7 Tampa Bay Bucks versus the 7-7 Carolina Panthers fighting for the NFC South division. This will. It is a big game for both teams. Bucks -3 on the road, 45.5 over under. Give me the Panthers and the under here. I think this is going to be a close game, but I like the under here, like a 20-17 type game. Maybe 21-17 since I'm taking the Panthers. I think they'll cover or win outright, actually. So if you want to take the money line, I wouldn't argue against you. So. But if you want to give me 3 points, I'll take them. But I like the Panthers and the under here.
We haven't seen the Bucks play their best football in a minute, Segs, all around. Mm-hmm. We've seen Carolina's Dow Jones up 1 second, lose to the Saints.
Right.
I would expect them to come out hammering at home. I like the Panthers in the game with you're laying 3 points. I'll take those at home.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going the other way. I think both offenses, regardless of who's banged up and who isn't, this is like 27-21. I'm taking the over in the game. I think the offenses are going to be dialed in a little bit because neither one of them has wowed you as of late. And it's got to sting because the Panthers had a chance to give themselves a little bit of leeway against the Saints, and they did not. I'm going with the over in this game. I get why the optics should say under.
Yeah.
But I think the quarterbacks both play well in this one. I think it's a late over cover. I'm going to take the over. I bet the over. I like the Panthers in the game, but I'm taking the over. I'm taking the over as far as my bet goes.
All right. Well, that'll do it for our six pack of picks. That'll do it for this week on Unpaved with Sean Salisbury. It's going to be a fun weekend. I mean, we've got games tonight. We've got games all day tomorrow, plus two NFL games, including Bears Packers. I think the other one's is Commanders Eagles, which is, I want to say, about 5-ish Eastern time before Bears-Packers. So we've got football all day long. There's a lot of good college basketball tomorrow as well. And then Sunday we have multiple games with big-time playoff implications come Sunday for the NFL. So it's just a jam-packed weekend of sports, and I have kids' sports and practices. And so it's going to be a sports-heavy weekend, like most weekends are, but this is a bigger weekend when we're talking a normal weekend in the NFL or college football regular season. A lot of these games mean a lot to all these teams.
And Segs, along with that, you talk about going to games. With my role as the national football director at NSR now, the recruiting company, 45 years, as good as it gets, honorable, no money grab. If you think your kid or kids that can play and they're under-recruited, you get a hold of me, whether it's on here at Sean Unfiltered, hit my slide into my DMs. And this is volleyball, basketball, football, baseball. It doesn't matter. I'm spending a lot of my time this weekend on about 65 kids that have sent me their information that I need to go and do a deep dive evaluation because this isn't a questionnaire company. We base on if we're bringing you on and try to get you to be able to play beyond it, whether it's NAIA or Division I football, to put you in, or basketball or soccer, any sport, women's volleyball, guys volleyball, golf, put you in a sport, studying it. So I'm going to spend a lot of time in front of a computer studying and evaluating these kids and their ability and what level and what box they fit into. So I'm looking forward to that. A lot of work this weekend.
can you get my 10-year-old an offer from Michigan by Monday?
Well, Segs, if I were to promise you that, you should immediately fire me and say,
unless I'll use that service again.
Now, if you're saying knowing you and knowing what I've seen and that there's potential there, come see me when he's actually at a recruitable age or close. Right. Yes. Then I'll tell you that. Yep. Segs, he can play. I don't know where, but somewhere. Now let's find a way how we flood the market with you know, relationships and proper evaluation of these kids, which isn't done well enough. Too many are under-recruited and too many promises are made by others. You won't get that from us, but you will get 100% dedication to making sure we've looked at every nook and cranny and give them an opportunity if they want to keep playing, to keep playing. So there you go. NSR, you can find me. Slide into my DMs if you've got somebody and let's talk.
Yeah, it'll be fun to watch that grow with you as you, you know,
can't wait.
Running everything.
Yeah, I can't wait to start going to like these, you know, 16U baseball tournaments and club tournaments. And I grew up with Steve Timmons at USC, you know, the volleyball player, mm-hmm. when the 84 Olympics and stuff. And so I used to watch it. I didn't play it in high school, basketball and baseball I did, but I used to watch a ton of it. So I'm excited to actually go to these like travel volleyball tournaments and club tournaments because they're really athletic and stuff.
I'll be at one on Sunday.
There you go. And you know about our mine and your affinity for baseball, right?
Yep.
And having learned in all these years of talking to the Astros and being a baseball fan, as a diehard Sox fan and watching, I'm anxious to, you know, from velo to, you know, hands and turning double plays and bat speed and exit velocity. I'm looking forward to seeing these kids because some of them at 15 are like, that kid's only 15. Right. I'm training a quarterback right now that does both, sits at 88 and can throw it close to 90s. Sits at 84, 85, hits 88.
Yeah.
He's like 14 years old. So they get better as they go along, but got to train him and teach him, got to evaluate him properly. So I can't.
Yes. We'll be interested to follow that. Thanks to Triple E. Thanks to Laura. Thanks to Bailey, as always, behind the scenes, making us look and sound great. Again, go like and subscribe to the YouTube channel at Unpaved Sean Salisbury. And get all the notifications when we go live Monday through Friday at 1 p.m. Eastern. We'll be back Monday to wrap all that we just discussed up. We'll have Coach JB join us. We will ask him about the Song Boys at Texas A&M and break it all down for you. I mean,
yeah, we'll even talk the results of the game, right?
Yeah, but I mean, first and foremost, we need his declaration on what he thinks about the Song Boys at Texas.
What we got to do, Bailey and Triple E, find an old school, even if we don't have one from this weekend, find me an old school Song Boys thing so we can play it for JB just to get his early reaction.
They'll have videos out
tone for the whole show. Oh, no doubt. No doubt. Don't they do a midnight thing? Yeah, that's the midnight yell, right? The midnight yell. Yeah. So that's tomorrow. That's like, let's say I'm getting caught. Tonight's game is Alabama.
Yes.
Oklahoma, 11 o'clock a.m. Central Time is A&M and Miami in College Station. So their midnight yell will be tonight. So something you'll get to see. I'm sitting here thinking, do they play, both teams play tonight? No, Miami and A&M play tomorrow. Yep. It's the Oklahoma game tonight. Right. So you will get that mid. That's why I said earlier, well, did we get any video from last night? No, because that would have been the yell if they were playing today. It'll be tonight for 11 o'clock, and you'll hear it long and loud. If you're anywhere near Bryan or College Station, Texas, it'll be there.
And then,
trust me,
we'll get Coach JB's reaction. So
you
can look forward
Song
to that.
Boys Unite. Okay.
I'm not saying that.
Maybe you get a scholarship there, Sakes. Put some respect on him.
Okay? For being a song boy? Yeah. You get scholarships for that?
I think you probably can. I don't know. Can you? You get scholarships for everything else. They get fishing scholarships in the South, Segs. I'm dead ass serious.
Dude, we got fishing here now.
Yeah, great. Yeah, we got fishing high school teams. Damn, that's awesome. I love it. I'm freaking all over it. I absolutely love it. But Segs, here's what I want you to do. You never know. Maybe your kids, maybe your boys have to choose like a Division I football player, or maybe they want to be Division I song boy. I don't know. No. Maybe, Sig.
Not happening.
I'll break down how we're going to evaluate them.
Get that in your portfolio at NSR. Song Boys. I mean, there's only one school, so you just push them to one school. It's easy money. It's like, here's a song boy for you.
I'm getting off this show before I overload my mouth with my ass, okay? There you go.
Your alma mater.
Yes, it is. Have a great weekend.
All right, we'll be back Monday. Thanks, 1 p.m. Eastern and noon Central. We'll talk to you guys later. Peace.
Unpaved, Sean Salisbury here for bringing authentic, real stuff to you. Hardcore opinion.
Sean Salisbury, a great NFL analyst, a former NFL quarterback.